This is Coaching as Benevolence, a podcast for people who are curious about using coaching for self-development. I'm Erin with Roots and Wings Grief and Loss Coaching.
And I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place Positive Intelligence Coaching. Today we're going to talk about grounding, what it means to use grounding techniques, what kind of technique can you incorporate into your daily routine to make a habit of grounding, and we'll just see where this conversation takes us. It's a busy time of year, you know, beginning of a new year. In the United States, we have a new administration that's just causing all kinds of chaos. So I think it's important to think about and talk about how we can remain grounded. And what does that mean? What does it even mean to be grounded? That's something that we can explore as well. So Erin, what comes to mind when you think of this topic?
Oh, so much in terms of like how I feel when I'm not grounded. You know, I think I would guess that other people also can say, I know what it feels like to be ungrounded, right? And I know what it feels like to be grounded. And that might look a little bit different for each person. But for me specifically, I notice when I'm not grounded, I'm much more circling in and having continuous negative thinking about something I did or said or that sort of thing. And that's a trauma response. When we turn those things inward on ourselves, right, that's not helpful. So grounding techniques for me have to be utilized rather consistently to not get into that loop. And I think for me, what I noticed in my past career, I would be in meetings back to back to back to back to back all day, no break. And I might have known tools to use in between meetings or strategies that I could have used for like a 30-second grounding technique, but I just couldn't ever get there because of the frequency of the meetings. And so now I have a little more space, and that allows me to find ways to ground more into what is really going on in my body and what my needs and wants are in the moment, and really more about my needs for that emotional safety and that calming of the nervous system. And so one thing that has been helpful for me is simply moving. I say this a lot. I was born moving, I guess. I had a nickname as a child to prove that, but moving is a key strategy for me, as well as getting up and getting a glass of water or sometimes a tea or something like that in between meetings can be really helpful for me to ground myself. And then the other thing that came up, I thought this topic was timely how you introduced it, because it started to make me think about, I am coaching a third and fourth grade girls basketball team. And in the games, it is so much going on because of the additional rules they make third and fourth graders use to help them learn the game. So it gets a little chaotic, and I know I start to feel that. So this is a good reminder to find more grounding strategies to use when I am coaching in the actual game. I think that'll help me. It'll help the players. It'll help everybody. So those were my initial thoughts when it came to mind. And then the final piece is just the imagery of grounding, like rooting in to underground, the tree root. It's a big part of the theme of my business is, you know, roots and wings, and grounding into those roots and knowing and having confidence in the fact that we each do have solid roots that we can root into in our own feet and down below. And while we may not always feel that, if we keep that imagery in mind, it'll hopefully start to resonate. So LaShawn, with grounding, what has come up for you?
Well, I love that you mentioned what it feels like not to be grounded or ungrounded, the racing thoughts, the getting caught up in that trauma response, and what it means to, one, to be aware of that, to be aware that you're in a trauma response, and also to, as you said, to be able to root into that base or that the feeling of being connected to something and supported. I think that is what it means to be grounded. My feeling when I think about grounded, what does that mean? And as you were talking, I was using my breath and using my sense of touch to really feel what that's like to be grounded. And I think it is that feeling of support, that feeling of stability. And I think that is characteristic of being grounded. And I love what you said about in your previous career, you were going from meeting to meeting to meeting, and it was difficult for you. You knew what to do. I think one phrase that comes to mind. I'm currently taking a self-development class with Jim Quick. It's a super brain. And he has all these little sayings that he brings up. And I think the reason he does that is it's really easy to remember. But one of the things he says is common sense is not always common practice. And we have these tools that we know as coaches, we have these tools that we can use. We have a toolbox, but it's not something that we can always access. And I love that you brought that up, Erin, because it's so important to be aware of that, that sometimes because of our external circumstances, because of the nature of, you know, having meetings back to back to back, you may not be able to access it. And that really shows a lot of awareness on your part as well. And you compared it to your current situation where you have more flexibility and you're able to move more, get a glass of water, get a cup of tea, and those grounding techniques. So I want to go back because I'm curious. When you look back at that time when you were going meetings back to back to back, you knew grounding techniques, but you didn't have access to it. Can you say a little bit more about how that showed up?
Yeah, I think I knew that, okay, I had, oftentimes the meetings would run over time, right? So then you're there making sure that you're not too late to the next meeting or what that might look like. But when they didn't run over, I think I knew in my head, like, hey, I should really, instead of hitting next meeting on Zoom or, you know, going to the next meeting in person, I should really take a quick break and check in with myself and feel what's going on, grab a glass of water, that sort of thing. I thought that that could have been an example of something that could have worked for me. But instead, in those moments, I would be like, oh yeah, I know that, but no time, next. You know, it was this like rushed feeling of no time. And while external factors played a significant role in that, internal factors played a huge role for myself as well, right? So I think if I could have been a little bit more mindful of what I truly had control over and what I did not, that would have been more helpful for me to then use a strategy to take a reset, take a break, and then move on. Part of that is how we're conditioned, right? Like when you think of like the school day, it's like go to the next thing, like lunch is 15 minutes or, you know, it's just, it's not a culture of breaks in that way. And I think, you know, while I can be more aware internally and use my tools, I can maybe also think about what's going on externally and advocating more up front as well. So those are some of the things that come to mind in those instances. And I think just even believing that I deserve that in the moment, or that I need that versus, oh, this is just an extra. So rather than it's not an extra, it's a need. It's a need to take the pause. I think I had a lot of fear too, that if I would take a pause, then that would just unravel into spiraling thinking type of thing. So I think that's another piece there too, that might've been going on.
Hearing a lot about one, you tell yourself, I should do this, but no time. So there's already this belief, this sense of urgency. The other, I love that you brought up towards the end about how there's a fear that if everything stops, if I take a pause, I might go back into a spiral. I might start to think about the pressure or something like that. There's a certain management of anxiety and maybe nervousness, expectations when we're busy. The busyness is almost like a coping strategy, it seems like. And so if we stop and take a moment and, you know, get a drink of water or even allow ourselves to sit in silence, there is that fear that what is going to come up in that silence? What is going to emerge? And will I be able to manage it? And will I be able to recover enough to go on to the next thing? So let me just stay in this busyness, because this busyness is familiar. This busyness is something I can handle. And if something comes up that I'm not prepared for, like if I take a pause and then I start racing thoughts and I go over something that I should have done in the other meeting, how am I going to recover from that? So there's that too. And I think that those are things that when we are looking at grounding and techniques that we can use, it is important to be honest with ourselves and also aware of what is this busyness not being grounded? What is not being grounded or being busy or moving from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next, knowing that it could end up in burnout, it could end up in exhaustion. What is the benefit so to speak, that we're getting from this. So I think it's important to understand that we're doing something, we're getting some kind of benefit from this. It might be temporary, it may not be the best thing, but it's important to know what purpose it's serving in our habit of busyness. And then when we go to grounded, what could we benefit from? How can this improve or make our overall experience better? It's something that we can explore when we're thinking about grounding or getting grounded. Like, what does it mean? And what will that bring to us? And how will that benefit us if we replace the busyness with something that's going to be more nourishing to the soul? And like Jim Quick says, common sense is not always common practice, but why? Why isn't it? And that's something that I would like to explore more in terms of our motivation. And we can get lost in the busyness and we can get lost in the tasks at hand and lose sight of our why. Like, why are we doing this? Why are we doing these meetings? What is the overall purpose for these meetings? And are we focusing on just, you know, getting it done, you know, the to-do list, getting this meeting done, but it is part of a bigger picture? And are we losing that bigger picture, that purpose, that higher purpose that we may have as human beings, as you know, employees, whatever the situation might be? Are we losing sight of that just so that we can stay busy? And why are we staying busy? Are we staying busy just for the sake of being busy? Or in your case, I know, as you know, someone with academic background myself, it's busy. It's not just for the sake of being busy. It really is. I mean, you're going from meeting to meeting. You're going, if you're teaching, you're going from teaching to maybe grabbing a bite to eat to you maybe talking to the students who might need extra support. So there's a lot going on. So I'm not saying that that's all just like in your head or that you're inventing this idea that you're busy or you're creating busyness in order to maybe or avoid uncomfortableness or uncertainty. That's not necessarily what I'm saying, but I do think that there is merit to, one, finding out what is this busyness doing for me? What is the benefit of this busyness? And how can I look at my why? What is my purpose? What is my why? Am I on track to achieving this? And it may not even be a question of achievement. It just could be your own well-being. Is this a benefit to my well-being or is it taking away from my well-being? So those are some thoughts that came up for me when I was listening to you, Erin. Any thoughts for you?
I love how you frame that. Like, yes, there is the busyness that we create potentially, but there's also just a natural busyness within certain roles that we maybe can't change unless we advocate for policies or different things within either an organization or institution or at a higher level. But that busyness piece can be used as a distraction. And I know you briefly talked about that too. And I think that's one of the things that was built into the fabric of my life because it was always like go, 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 go. And so for me, I think that was a way of distracting myself from other things. Again, partially it was designed that way and I didn't have a choice. And partially, you know, I kept perpetuating that for myself. You know, is that hamster wheel you can't get off of? And it's like, is that because of the person on the wheel? Is it the wheel? Is it something else? Yeah. And it's all those things. So I think you did a great job of framing all of those things. I think for grounding, I have a curiosity to kind of pivot the conversation, but a curiosity about listening. Because I think for me, when I listen to someone talk, I can start to really get grounded versus just listening to myself, for instance. But when I listen to someone talk, that is really grounding. So it makes me wonder, you know, you always see people out with their pods in their ears and listening to podcasts and things like that. Is it, because I always thought it was a distraction or a learning tool, right? That's how I see our podcast, a learning tool, right? But maybe it's also a grounding tool. And I hadn't thought about that until really sitting here and listening to you speak and how grounding that feels internally for me as well. So I think that could be another strategy that people are tapping into, is really listening to what other people have to say as a grounding tool. And I think when we can be mindful and purposeful about what we're listening to, that can then also have a positive effect on what those thought patterns are, what we internalize in our minds and behaviors. So I really like thinking about just the different ways that we can ground ourselves. And then I think there are certain people too that tend to be more naturally into daydreaming and creativity and things that may be grounding exercises for them, but for others it may look like ungroundedness, right? Not groundedness. So I think this is so different for so many people. You know, in grief and loss, there's a study done in 2001 where it looked at the types of grievers, and there's instrumental grievers and intuitive grievers, and the best approach is to blend those practices and you'll have better outcomes. But instrumental people tend to be more cognitive and logical and see humor as a strategy, for instance, in their grief, whereas intuitive tend to feel deep pain and really into the arts. And so I think if we were to look at even just those different types of grieving styles, we would see groundedness very different for each person too. So I think maybe also that's another piece to this, is groundedness is so different for a lot of people. And there might be common themes for certain types of people and that sort of thing. But just recognizing that if you're frustrated in trying traditional grounding practices, for instance, maybe try something a little bit different, like art. And as I say that aloud, I mean, I do tend to lean more intuitive in my grieving process. So why did I say I needed a glass of water, for instance, when in between a meeting? Maybe I draw a sketch of something instead. Just a way to start being more curious about strategies. So LaShawn, when I frame those two, are you one or the other? And do you recognize any of your grounding tools that fit within those?
I would say that I'm kind of in between instrumental and intuitive. And I think I lean more towards instrumental because you said humor is also a tool that instrumental grievers use. And I am cognitive in a lot of the things that I do. And so I would say I'm more instrumental. I'm still learning how to tap into the emotional part of myself and to be able to experience that range of emotions. But I think it has something to do with the fact that I have a background in academics. And so I feel comfortable, and it's a familiar thought process to go into that, weighing the pros and cons, analyzing things, finding out why certain things happen rather than just letting them happen and letting it emerge. And I'm finding that that's the skill that I am learning. And it's fun and interesting to learn about that part of myself. That I would say that I do have strong tendency towards intuitive response to things. I do tend to root into my intuition when I'm making decisions, when I'm gauging people, I'm judging characters, that kind of thing. I do tend to lean into, how does this feel? How do I feel in the presence of this person? But when it comes to my own processes, when it comes to understanding how I feel and how I am coping with whatever is happening, if we go to grief, it is very cerebral. And I do tend to be like, okay, so I understand this about psychology, I understand this about this, and it's intellectual. And I would say I'm an instrumental griever. And it's interesting that you should bring up the two different types of grieving or grievers, because like so many things that we talk about, there are so many nuances with groundedness, and it's going to show up differently for everyone. Each individual is going to have their own technique or their own connection to being grounded. And that is a journey in itself, to find out what really works for you. People can guide you. They can give you advice. They can say, this is what works for me, and yoga works for me, or going for a walk works for me. For me, it's breathing, partly because of my training in positive intelligence and also some meditation practice as well. Breath is my anchor to being grounded. When I feel myself breathing shallowly, I tell myself, okay, so now breathe deeper, let the breath circulate more. And then I kind of root into and ground into my breath, but it might be different for another person. Like you said, it could be through art. It could be through movement. Erin, you mentioned movement. I think it's important for all of us to be self-aware, to be curious about when we feel grounded. When you feel grounded, you could take on a stance of curiosity and be like, okay, so what is it about this situation that makes me feel grounded. For me, it's being able to pay attention to my breathing. For others, it might be a sound, could be like aromatherapy, a smell. It could be, like you said, Erin, it could be listening to someone talk. That's something that I was thinking about while you were talking, Erin, about these things are going to be different for different people. And so the fun is we get to figure out what works for us, and we get to find out new things about ourselves, things we might take for granted. We will be looking at from a different angle, and maybe we can be more aware of what things that we do that allow us to feel stable, that allow us to feel grounded. And so I think it would be really fun to be more aware of times when you feel calm, when you feel safe, when you feel stable. What's going on? What's happening? Is there something you're doing? Is it something you hear, see, feel? Get curious about what elements lead to you feeling safe and stable and all of those wonderful things that go with grounding. Another question that I had is, what is the, if we could maybe talk about what the benefits of being grounded are. We did talk about what it's like when we're not grounded. What is it like when we are grounded? What are we able to do when we're grounded? And one thing that I find when I'm grounded is things slow down and I'm able to take one thing at a time. And even though I'm surrounded by chaos or I'm surrounded by so many things happening at once, when I'm grounded, I feel like that eye of the storm, that everything around me might be swirling, but I can see and I can go, oh, that's not important. And I can go, oh, that is important. I can do that. Or I need help with this, or I need to do this. And so often if I'm in a situation where I hear myself speaking really, really fast and my mind is racing, then again, I'm going to pay attention to my breathing, and then I can actually see and experience things slowing down. And my voice also slows down. You'll probably notice that my voice is slowing down. And it allows me to make better decisions. I have access to clarity. And just physiologically, my body's not under so much strain. And I can feel that I'm breathing deeper and that I'm more aware of what's going on around me. And I'm also aware of my physical, I can feel the sweater that I'm wearing and that kind of thing. And it allows me to process things and to give myself the time that I need when I'm grounded. How about you, Erin?
I was just practicing some grounding as you were talking, and it felt so good because, you know, like, what does this feel like? Well, for me in the moment, you know, it's closing my eyes and doing some of that breathing that LaShawn mentioned. And I hold on, I think for me too, containing myself, like holding my leg, the side of my leg, knowing where I'm at and those sorts of things, I think can be grounding for me. I want to take a step back to my prior career experience. So right out of undergrad, teaching high school, and I had spent a lot of my undergrad listening to music. If I studied, music, it was on. If I was somewhere, music was on. Like, music was such a part of my life. And I'm a musician myself too, so it's a part of my life in that way as well. But I remember when I was teaching my first year, the thought occurred to me, because I was feeling very stressed. I'm like, I just need music. Like, I need to listen to music. Each day, there's no music in my life at all. So I went from having music in my life to never having music in my life. And I remember at that point feeling like so confused by that, like, oh, should I put on music at some point in the classroom? And then what would that look like? And but anyway, it was one of those first understandings of myself at that, you know, growing into adulthood of what grounds me. And music still to this day grounds me. Unfortunately, then I wasn't as aware and just kind of was like, oh yeah, that'd be great, but oh well. You know, like, again, I guess this tends to be a pattern, right? I notice these things at work and I'm like, okay, that's all right. We don't need to use them. And so I think just as we go through what grounding looks like for each person, maybe considering the smallest, and we always talk about this, like the smallest factor of what you can pay attention to for grounding, or what you might remind yourself of, or what you put in as a phone reminder of. Because I think when you're establishing this, like, there's clearly reasons that it doesn't stick. And, you know, there's the trauma response, the physiological pieces that are so complex, what's going on the outside, the external forces that are at play. So yeah, there's a lot of reasons why this doesn't stick for a lot of people. And if we can be intentional about it and have those small steps toward incorporating it in our lives, it'll be more useful. The other thing I think of when I think of strategies that work for me when I think of grounding, it is also speaking, right? Like speaking these thoughts aloud rather than keeping them inside helps me gain more understanding, helps me have better ideas about what might work for me and what doesn't, versus if I were just to do an activity on a goal setting sheet, for instance, or something like that. I think we always talk about things being a process. I think that's true. And I think as part of that process, there has to be that dialogue or communication. It can't be something that's always done in a silo, because that's just not how you're going to make the change that you need to make or want to make. And so I would go back and tell my right out of undergrad self, teaching and feeling extremely stressed, hey, slow it down. And this means something to you. Listen to your body. Why did this come up about music? You know, what could it look like for this to be a healthy tool in your classroom and those sorts of things? And what does that mean too? Like, is this the right career fit for you? So a lot of kind of bigger questions too. But when I'm grounded, I can be in that space to ask those and to feel what I need to feel and to be aware of what my true needs are, rather than being in a rush space and just going with something that isn't necessarily what's best for me or for others. So that's kind of I feel like I took a kind of a history of my grounding experiences from back then to what I've been focusing on more today. And so, yeah, I think that's all I have to say on this topic for now. LaShawn, what would you like to add?
One thing that has come up before when you brought up your past experience, and then just now as you're bringing up your journey, which is beautiful, I love that you laid that out because it's a great example of the evolution of finding grounding techniques and looking back. You know, they say hindsight is 20/20. Looking back at your younger self starting in a profession that was high stress and realizing that when you were learning, music was such an integral part of your life and you're a musician. So that's also part of it too. And then realizing the stark contrast between that music being there and then not being there, and then, you know, kind of wondering why not. And then the thing that really comes up for me is the idea of permission. You tell yourself, this is something I need. I don't have time. So it's, and you brought that up when you were talking about that before, the idea of permission. And I think that's important concept to, especially, and I don't know, I feel like women, we tend to not give ourselves permission for self-care, for integrating those things that matter to us that we might rationalize is not something either we is appropriate, or that we tend to say, oh, well, it's something that I need or something that I'm interested in, but it's unusual. You might have thought as someone teaching in high school, is music something that you can put into the classroom, and how would that work? And so when you were talking to your younger self, I heard in that you giving your younger self permission, this is important to you. How can this be added to your day-to-day life in this new situation? How can you add it in? So one, the really important thing that came up was recognizing something that is of value to you, that you said, this is important to you. Music is important to you. And then recognizing that you're in a different situation and you're navigating new waters. How can we adjust to these new waters, but bring in this very important element that we have recognized helps us? So how can we do that? How can we integrate that in? So that was another piece that I wanted to bring up as well that really stood out for me. I feel pretty complete on this topic. Yeah, go ahead.
As you were talking, I just thought of one other thing and want to throw that out there real quickly around facts. Like sometimes just laying out the facts of the situation can be helpful to, you know, whatever may be causing you to feel ungrounded. And I think when we look at those facts, you know, sometimes when we're not grounded, we often go to black and white thinking rather than nuanced thinking. Mm-hmm. So you look at the facts and then you can nuance each and every single one of them to show that nothing is all good or all bad. So if you're feeling ungrounded after a bad conversation, there's still learning that happened there. There's still growth that happened there. So what was good from, what was a takeaway from that too, versus it all being all of one thing or all of another? I think that that can be really powerful, because then when you feel like things aren't going well, you can really start to lean into the facts of the situation, what you want to shift, while also holding compassion for yourself. So that was the other thing I wanted to add.
That's so important. And being aware of the facts. And then also, like you said, the black and white thinking, all or nothing, that is characteristic of being ungrounded. So like you said, when you are grounded, you have that space and you feel stable and safe enough to nuance things and to see the grays. Because when you are in a state of upset or you are ungrounded, you're untethered, you're kind of moving in the wind, you're getting knocked around by all the chaos around you, it's very difficult to look at the in-between and the middle path and the nuances, as you said, Erin, so well. So that's really good point, looking at the facts. And that is a grounding technique as well, I think, being able to take a step back and take stock of what is the situation? Where am I? I think that is also could be a way to root into a more stable state of mind, just by looking at the facts. You're engaging your executive functions when you are looking at facts. So yeah. Yeah, so such important and valuable topics that we have covered in this conversation. We are definitely at the moment of coaching nuggets of wisdom. Do you have any in mind, Erin, or would you like me to go?
I just feel compelled to share how you showed that imagery of the storm and the trees and like the groundedness in between that. I really like that too, as a strategy, leaning into those imagery pieces. So my coaching nugget of wisdom for today would to likely go back through this episode. And as we drop different nuggets of wisdom throughout, find one thing that you would like to try and commit to trying it by telling a friend or writing it down or putting it in your calendar, for example.
Okay, wonderful. I will add to that and say, be curious, get curious. Curiosity is the antidote to judgment. Judge, we exclude. And when we exclude, we cannot acknowledge. And when we cannot acknowledge, we cannot heal. So that's really important. So get curious and enjoy. Enjoy this journey. Thanks for joining us for Coaching as Benevolence. I'm LaShawn with Meychelle Sage Place, Positive Intelligence Coaching.
And I'm Erin with Roots and Wings, Grief and Loss Coaching.
Have a benevolent day.